Welcome to Idle Red Hands, a podcast from Japan about gaming and gamer life. And welcome to Idle Red Hands. I'm Chris.
I'm Wayne.
I'm Lau. Well, I just finished downloading the Torg bundle.
Legally, through Bundle of Holding.
Yeah, that's okay. I guess you get illegal bundles.
Yeah.
But I would have kept that a secret. I would have said I borrowed them from somebody.
Right.
Yeah. Borrowed the PDFs. Yeah, so that's pretty good. I was pretty happy about that since I have most of the books, but I don't have any of the PDFs.
All right. Yeah, you're always talking about Torg and yeah, how it's a great system and it needs more love.
Is it a bundle of old books or is it a new, like, updated version?
Pretty much old books, but actually there is a revised... But I don't think revised recently, but there is a revised version of the rule book, so I don't have that.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Cool. So we'll see what's different between that and the rule book that I do have.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. And in other gaming news for me, our Rifts game ended pretty spectacularly.
Oh, really? What happens? Yeah.
Supernova?
Yeah, I guess a supernova within the party. So it ended.
Right.
And we're restarting with three galaxies, but we're planning our group together.
Okay, that's good.
And for people who are not familiar, Three Galaxies or Phase World, I guess Phase World is a world in the Three Galaxies, but it was the first dimension book for that particular area.
Yes.
And that's, I guess it's space opera would be a way to describe it.
That's okay. Just what I was going to say. Yeah, it's Rift's take on a space opera. It's really cool. Yeah. I've said it before on the podcast, but it's actually one of my favorite settings of all time in gaming.
So basically it's like Flash Gordon with mega damage.
Well, yeah, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, that's actually not a bad way to look at it. It's fairly Star Wars-y, I think.
Yeah, I think that would be better. Yeah.
But it has the magic and psionics and superpowers and, you know, it's Rifts, it's the kitchen sink
right,
of a role-playing game. But all of those different things, for me, anyway, they seem to go mix well with a space opera because kind of the high power of magic and psionics mixes well with the high powers of technology and sci-fi, so... I quite like
it. I mean, if you're talking about like space opera, then technology might as well be magic because, hey, you don't really care how it works. It just does.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you know, actually, I think a lot of the races in there are fairly imaginative. The robot ones, even though I was never really interested in playing one, but they're called the robot jocks. It's a race of people that accidentally opened up a dimensional hole into some kind of deific plane, and a giant monster came out and cursed the whole race with ailing and weak bodies. So to make up for it, they ride around in big powered armor all the time. So
yeah. There's another one, another spacer race where they have some sort of disease.
Mm-hmm.
So they're essentially plague carriers.
Yeah.
Okay.
So they need to wear some sort of, I guess, body armor or containment suit.
And there's this one planet that's just like Earth and has inhabitants just like people, except that they're mega damage. Because there's radiation.
Right, I'm sure there is.
Yeah, and we're going to be like the Rebellion. So like resistance fighters.
So okay. It's even more Star Wars-y now.
yeah, except for Oni Ninja.
Mm.
As our Chewbacca. Yeah. Oh, I suppose then you get your Sonic as your Jedi.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
There you go. Yeah.
I guess I should just make Han Solo.
Yeah.
Yeah, you should.
Well, you've always liked that character, so.
Except as an Oni and wielding a katana.
Yes.
And also a ninja.
And that's all for news. Only Lyle has news. Wayne and I have been busy.
Oh, yeah. I've just been sitting at home in my underwear. Yeah. Building rich characters. This will be even better than the last one. Yeah. Actually, Rifts is the kind of game, or Palladium is the kind of system where you can just sit at home rolling up new characters because it's all rolling.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yeah.
And also because it takes that long.
It really does. The skins kill me every time.
Yeah, it does take a while.
Mm.
So over the New Year's holiday, I was trying to make the X-Men with GURPS.
Okay.
GURPS system. Yeah.
Right.
Now that takes a long time. Because I had seen X-Men Days of Future Past, which I really enjoyed.
Mm-hmm.
And thought, wow, I want to make Colossus and that. So.
And what made you choose Rifts?
I didn't.
Oh, made you choose GURPS?
I did do it with Heroes Unlimited, and Heroes Unlimited is actually quite easy to make the X-Men because they pretty much reverse engineered the X-Men to make the powers.
Mm-hmm.
So you do that, but of course you're going to encounter some limitations. Like it's hard to make a complete Wolverine, They can make most of Wolverine, but you can't make him entirely.
Everything except his left arm.
His legs.
One of these days, a joke is going to be funny.
What are you looking at, bub? That one wasn't it.
Right.
So I grabbed GURPS because you can make anything in GURPS, but it can be quite difficult. It takes a long time.
Right, it's not like they say you can make anything in GURPS easily. It's just you can make anything in GURPS.
In under a day. You know? Well, talking about technology and magic and how it's blended in settings like Star Wars and Rifts, that gets into the topic that we have today, which is magic and realism. And the reason why we chose this topic, because we saw something online about a person saying how when you start to introduce reality or certain realistic elements to a world with magic, it kind of breaks magic.
Or magic breaks a world.
Or magic breaks the world. Mm-hmm. Yeah, maybe that's a better way to put it. And just wondering how to combine or how to explain magic within a game so that people get more out of it and appreciate it more. Now, of course, our first instinct is just go, it's magic.
Yeah, right.
So it's about as realistic as magic gets.
Right.
But then thinking, yeah, people do want magic to make sense, even however oxymoronic that sounds. Mm-hmm. So we're not going to try to make magic realistic. We're just going to try to make magic make sense in your game. We've decided to divide it into two. One, internal, sort of the rules of magic, and then external, which is like how magic would affect your setting or your world.
I think that's a good way to put it, is people want the magic to make sense, because especially from a game perspective, there are rules in the game system for a reason, so that I feel players can do things and eventually get to understand what those outcomes are going to be. You know, like, there's rules for how much damage weapons do. There's rules for how you hit things. There's rules for how you attempt tasks. And I tend to think that we, as real people, kind of know what our capabilities are to some degree. And so rules being consistent system-wise gives players that ability to, you know, do the same thing with their characters. And magic being able to do anything breaks that. And so, yeah, it's magic and it's kind of supposed to be able to do anything. But exactly what you said, Lyle, I think players still want there to be some kind of consistency. Like, if you, I don't know, cast the same spell and it's a different result every single time, that's going to be pretty unsatisfying.
Then you're a chaos mage.
Okay, fair enough.
Sorry.
I mean, yeah, and I set myself up for that one. But in being the chaos mage, I mean, that's built into the character type,
of course,
where,
yeah,
like, you don't know what's going to pop out. And so expecting some reliability, well, play a different character.
Yeah, yeah. Despite me throwing a wrench in there, Wayne, I think you hit on the key important issue there, and that's consistency. It's just players have to be able to know how the world is going to react to what they're doing, in order to be able to predict the future or, you know, just deal with that world. So, yeah, it's your magic, even if it can break the rules, it has to be able to establish new rules that people can still follow.
Well, I mean, yeah, you talking about kind of formula and rituals and that predictability. I mean, most magic, right, in fictional terms and in game terms, I mean, requires more than just, to draw an example, like the Force, right? Like, we don't know how Jedi manifest their powers, right? They just kind of, like, blink or raise their hand and doors open. But mm-hmm. for things like D&D or other fantasy games and fiction, often there's, like, material components or some kind of hand gestures you have to do, or, you know, scribing pentagrams or any other number of ritual steps, which are kind of like those rules I mentioned before, right? If you do A, B, C, and D in that order, then this effect is going to happen. And doing those four things in that order again, if the conditions are the same, should produce the same results.
Well, that said, you know, I think that Star Wars itself even does have a lot of, I'm going to use air quotes here, rules to the powers that the Jedi can use. I mean, they have several codified powers, like the mind trick or the force choke. And there's some things that, there's some limits on their powers as well. For example, they can levitate an entire spaceship in front of it, but for some reason they can't make themselves fly.
Well,
that doesn't actually make any sense, but
that's
the way the universe is set up.
So no, you're
even in a very free form.
Haven't they used their telekinesis to augment their leaping ability and do crazy flips?
Yes, they'd have. But for some reason, it's just against canon for them to be able to fly.
I think it's mostly plot device, but...
Well, the point of what I'm saying is that even in a very wide-open magical system, there's no reason that arbitrary rules can't be made.
No, and I think you're right. And you bringing up those points like reminded me, like, okay, you know, when Obi-Wan Kenobi does that hand wave, that is him using, you know, the mind trick or, you know, sticking your hand out and kind of raising it up. That is you trying to levitate something. Mm-hmm. So for us, the viewer, there are things that say, okay, if I do this thing, this is probably the effect that's going to happen.
Right, right.
You know?
Well, I think one thing, if you have magic in your world, there's something that's very similar to all of those, like to Star Wars or to like Harry Potter or Dungeons and Dragons. And one of those things is training.
Mm.
So you can teach somebody how to do it. And perhaps they need the potential. Like, for example, in Harry Potter, they need to be
a wizard, Harry.
A wizard.
Right.
And born into a wizard's family, except for me.
A couple people.
Yeah, a couple people. I haven't read the books.
Basically, you I don't think you could be taught. You just have to have that innate ability, yeah.
Sorry. Go ahead.
I was keeping it short.
No, it's for the listeners, not for me. Yeah. And in the... I guess if you look at the Star Wars game, they talk about people being Force-sensitive. Therefore, they have the capability of being taught how to manipulate these forces.
Right.
So I guess there's one step, you have to have the potential, and the next step is you have to have training. And that's fairly consistent across a lot of different stories and different games. And if you can teach somebody something, you have to teach them from a certain set of rules. No matter how fantastic the results are, when they cast a spell or use their powers, there are certain rules on how they can use them, and certain limits.
Mm.
Yeah, that's a really good point that I hadn't thought of until you brought it up. And since we're kind of starting with this internally consistent thing, I wonder if it would be possible to have a setting or a story where magic is not something you can teach. I mean, I guess you have the sorcerer
type
character
from
D&D, where they learned to, you know, control the magic themselves. And just like a Jedi, I bet another sorcerer could guide a student, you know? It would be like, okay, maybe things are going to be a little different for you because magic is, you know, this personal thing for us sorcerers, but here are some guidelines on how you could do it. Like, I don't imagine things would be wildly different to the point where no one could advise any other person on how to use magic.
Mm-hmm.
Because if that was the case, then I tend to think magic would die out.
I think in the sorcerer reminds me of a superhero, and even superheroes can train their powers or become better at their powers.
Hmm.
And if they're being, like, if you look at the X-Men, I mean, they're with other mutants, and while the powers may be different, there's certain things that they can share with other mutants to help them develop their own powers.
Mm-hmm.
Like, yeah, that's a good point.
Squint your eyes. Squint your eyes. Why? I don't know.
Just it tightens the beam.
Right. Yeah. Right. I'm not Cyclops. Yeah.
I think this is going a little bit off topic, but you've said the point before, Lyle, that a lot of the best comic book stories are when superheroes find new ways to use their powers to perhaps like circumvent some other superpowered villain against them. So yeah, I think you're absolutely right. That kind of training can obviously would pay off in any kind of circumstance.
That's a good point, Chris, because, I mean, if we're talking about internal consistency, if there wasn't any internal consistency to either the superpower or the magic, then they would only be able to get that effect one time.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would have to do something completely different to get the same effect, or they just may not be able to duplicate it at all, you know?
Mm-hmm. Right, yeah.
One thing, yeah, and with comics, since we are talking about them, is that it is pseudoscience a lot of times when they write it. Like the Hulk, gamma radiation, they turn him into the Hulk, but right, it was really because gamma radiation sounded cool.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yep. Before they realized radiation gave you cancer.
Oh, I think they knew.
Okay. What were they trying to do? Like, increase its appeal? Yeah, it's not that bad.
And there are some extremes, such as the extremes on the more scientific sense, if you will. Something like Harry Turtledove's Darkness series, where he wanted to tell the story of World War II, but in a fantasy setting.
Hmm.
So in order to have things like, you know, like that kind of the industrial powers fighting each other, he has magic where you're able to essentially manufacture it. And then what he's done with magic is you have practical mages who are, I guess, would be equivalent to like an engineer or somebody.
Okay.
And theoretical mages, which would be like a physicist. And so they're able to study magic and do experiments with magic and develop and push magic and develop new things.
Mm-hmm.
So not to spoil it, but I mean, it does follow World War II very closely. So if you imagine things like the atomic bomb and that development in World War II, and then putting that into a fantasy setting, so you have people who are developing magic so that they can create this fantastic new effect.
Hmm.
So, and even in within that old, even within that world, they refer to mages of antiquity or wizards of antiquity as being a little bit more primitive and not really understanding why their spells were working or why their rituals were working.
Mm-hmm.
But right. They knew, for example, that if at this location we, you know, spill blood on the ground and think really hard or imagine things, then we can actually create these effects.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just like, okay, people do that over and over and over again, and then finally they get kind of some sort of scientific method to it.
Right.
And now they're able to find, oh, we're able to do this because there's this ley line there. And then if they discover that, they're able to make the next step.
Mm-hmm. Spill blood, other ley lines and
yeah, things. Yeah, and what else can we do, you know, with these ley lines? And it's like, oh, we'll have caravans and that. So So there you have somebody who's created a very scientific magic, if you would. And really just because I think he was reverse engineering technology and trying to make it magical. So he was trying to figure out how he would do that, at least to make it interesting in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think that's a good way to ensure that magic is internally consistent, because to me that's kind of the goal of what you want to do if you're creating your own magic system or if you're, you know, tweaking something in terms of a game, where he said, here's what I want the story to be about, here's what I need magic to do, so let's come up with some rules that allow magic to do that. You know, and let's figure out how this is going to work. And I think that's what really helps that, you know, magic be internally consistent.
Yeah, I mean, that's certainly one way to do it. It's like, yeah, look at the end goal. And I think, I mean, you have people who think, well, do you want a low fantasy or low magic setting? Do you want a high fantasy, magic setting? So you're thinking about the extremes and the limits. So in Star Wars, I mean, Lucas wants the Jedi to be powerful and mysterious, but not earth-shaking. He still wants things like the Death Star to be the game changer. He still wants people in Starfighters to shape things and sway things. He wants somebody like Han Solo to be relevant. So that will put a cap on the extremes of the magic, and then you kind of go from there. And I'm not saying that George Lucas put a lot of thought into.
Right. Because I was going to say, you know, not to bash Star Wars, but there seems to be kind of some loose caps there, you know? Like, after watching, like, CinemaSins or reviews of the, you know, Star Wars prequel, they do stuff with the Force powers that would have come in handy at other times, but they don't do it.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Or if you look at Robert E. Howard and he's thinking, well, I want muscles to matter and make a difference in this world, but I want magic to be in the world because that's very mysterious, very exciting, very sinister. So, you know, magic takes a long time, or spells take a long time to cast.
Mm-hmm.
Like, not to compare the two, but I've been listening to a lot of Conan audiobooks recently, both Robert Jordan and Robert E. Howard.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, in that vein of Conan-esque sword and sorcery, I tend to think there's like a bit more internal consistency than with the Jedi and Star Wars, because it's exactly what you said, Lyle. Magic takes a long time. Magic is almost universally always evil. So, I don't know, you know, listening to these descriptions of like, you know, brushes or paint that needs to be brushed on with hair made from, you know, a dead virgin, or like, you know, ground up baby's bones and all this other kind of over the top and cheesy, but definitely evil stuff. All the rituals and all the rules are kind of different, but there's this one overarching component of no one is going to think you are good if you use magic in a Conan-esque setting, which I think, even though all the spells are then different, still has this very, I don't know, cohesive internal consistency that makes it feel similar, even though all of the effects and all of the ways you do it are different.
It's a good point you said about that they're all evil and have an evilness. And one of those things is, oh, in particular, that magic is unnatural.
Yes.
It's in the natural world, but it's unnatural. So that's going to cause problems not only for the recipient of the spell, but also the caster.
You know, actually, that that Harry Turtledove book you were talking about, Lyle, where he replaced technology with magic, kind of reminded me a little bit of a movie I saw, it's probably like 4 or 5 years ago, called The Sorcerer's Apprentice with Nick Cage.
Oh, I was just about to ask if that was the one. Okay.
Yeah. It wasn't a great movie, but...
say no more. You said Nick Cage.
Yeah, right. but it was interesting the way that they kind of explained magic. And it was the ability to use basically electricity to manipulate things on a subatomic level. So basically they said like you could vibrate atoms to make things hotter, or you could add kinetic force to something to make it like throw itself away or come towards you or things like that. So at the beginning it was really interesting about that, but then they broke their own consistency and they started doing, you know, like animating statues and things like that, which doesn't really kind of fit with the whole it's electricity.
Yeah. No, as you were describing it, I was thinking, sounds like they explained too much.
Exactly, yeah, for what they wanted to do. And I think that's just kind of something to keep in mind if that's what you're designing into the game. If you're going to give an explanation to magic, you have to make sure that it holds with that explanation, that it it doesn't break its own rules. Because, as we've been saying, consistency is the key.
I don't want people to think that we're suggesting that in order for you to have an internally consistent magic system, you have to make it from scratch.
Right.
And think of your goal and think of what is going to be some common elements and what are the limits. Because I think what you need to do is just, for example, if you're going to play D&D or you're going to play GURPS and its magic system or Rifts, but you look at what the magic system is and what they're saying are the limits and they're saying is the source. And I would just say accept that.
Right.
Yes, I agree completely. A campaign, I probably mentioned this before, but a campaign I was in many years ago, the game master, he limited himself to using only the rules that were in the books for a D&D campaign. So only the spells that were in whatever spell books were available that had been published. And it was fun because if you knew the books well, you could guess what kind of spells people were using. And then thereby that you could guess what kind of schools of magic they were in, and thus what kind of spells they might also be able to cast as well. And that's something I've tried to hold myself to as well, and I thought it was really cool. Because you can use magic as just a hand wave to explain anything, but if you, as a game master, follow the same rules that the characters do, then the world just feels so much tighter and more fun, in my opinion.
Well, even something like D&D, where the internal consistency of magic is, in my opinion, just like a complete, you know, mechanical system. Of, you know, spell slots and spell levels, and okay, a wizard of this rank can memorize so many spell slots per day. Like, it's consistent, and even if it may not have any kind of fictional meaning, like, why can't a wizard remember everything, or why do spells disappear whenever they're cast, and you're like, it kind of doesn't matter, they just do. And the fact that it always happens when you're using magic of that type, it's internally consistent, and it doesn't really have to make sense because, hey, it's magic, and it doesn't make sense anyway, so long as it, you know, continues to follow its own rules.
Right.
Absolutely, and if it's not going to follow its own rules, and I didn't see the Sorcerer's Apprentice with Nick Cage.
Don't.
He makes a lot of movies. But I'm wondering, when they animated the statue, was that important for the story?
No, it was just cool.
Okay. Mm. All right, so don't do that. Yeah. But, you know, if somebody can remember spells, it doesn't disappear from their mind, or they're able to do new things with magic. And why is that? Have they done something like in the Harry Turtledove series? Have they had a breakthrough in magic, like through study and experimentation? Or is it just something for the story, you know, like that's going to be a really interesting thing for the players to explore?
Mm-hmm. No, I completely agree, because again, I mean, from a game perspective, any game has rules. And then the interesting part comes in when one or two pieces or something lets you bend or break those rules. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I would agree with Lyle. If you're doing it for to further the story or to make something interesting or stand out, then by all means, kind of break that internal consistency. You just can't do it a lot, because then it's just going to devolve into chaos and not be special and unique. It's going to be like, oh yeah, another thing that doesn't follow the rules. Great.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Basically, yeah.
So we've looked at internally and how magic should be internally consistent, but now we like to look at externally, like how does magic affect the world around it? And I guess a classic example is, or a couple classic examples, if you have a fireball wielding wizards, are you really going to have people fighting in like a box formation?
Right.
Like pikemen and or ranks of Romans. And another one would be if you have people that can heal with a touch, why do you have sick people?
Right, right. Yeah, that was always the big one. Like looking in the D&D or another fantasy role-playing game equipment section, like why is there medical supplies when a couple chapters back this character can raise the dead and heal the sick with a touch?
Well, you know, it's one of those things. I think I hate to kind of throw cold water on the whole topic, but the more you think about any of these effects, the harder it's going to be to actually rationalize any kind of world consistent with what we think about now. And we talked about
Thank you, and that wraps us up. And...
right, okay.
I don't want to kill things, but like you say, if you have a spell like detect truth or detect lies or something like that, how much does that change society? You know, there's no longer any need for actual due process and court cases. There's barely any need for investigations. It throws things all up. And don't get me wrong, that's amazing. It's the kind of thing where you can add just one small spell and it can completely change the entire world. Raise the dead. How much would that change things? But it's one of those things that it's really also hard to try and build a world with that kind of magic, because it would be so different from the one we know.
You're absolutely right. And I mean, that's kind of one of the things I think distinguishes science fiction from fantasy is, you know, you take this one change to the world and then extrapolate how it's going to change society and the world mm-hmm. at large, right? And yeah, you're right. If in this world people had a detect truth spell, then there wouldn't be any need for due process or anything like that. But I think, at least for me personally, some of that should be in the setting to show, or the system to show that the writers of this world have taken that into consideration and at least thought somewhat about how magic is going to affect the world around it, mm-hmm. as opposed to just saying, oh yeah, there's magic, everything's exactly the same, except there's magic.
Right.
Because everything wouldn't be exactly the same. Because there'd be magic, which is not real.
Also, I think there's a tendency to overestimate the amount of magic that there is in a fantasy world, mm-hmm. because we often form like parties of, you know, and people want to play different things. So you might have the fighter, but then you'll have like two or three magical characters, mm-hmm. and then think, well, that's kind of the norm. Like if 10 or 20% of the population is a wizard, I mean, that would shape the world and you would have probably the world being run by wizards and whatever. Mm-hmm. But, you know, magic is difficult. So in most settings, magic is very difficult. So the reason why you have apothecaries and you have, you know, bandages and things like that, because there just aren't enough healers,
mm-hmm. right.
magical healers in the world. The reason why you have huge armies, and you think about the Lord of the Rings or the Hobbit and those movies, and you have Gandalf not doing very much. Mm-hmm. So right. You do need huge armies in which to fight.
Right.
No, that's a good point. And I think, you know, most role-playing games make a point to say, we're telling a story about these special characters here, and they're called the protagonists, and you're going to play them. You know, because nobody wants to really play a schlub. Nobody, you know, that you want to play the characters who can use magic and, you know, the characters who are special and important. And as you said, Lyle, like, that group of adventurers is by no means an example subset of the population.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And if people want to sprinkle their town, like, full of wizards and that, then, I mean, there are going to be consequences. And they're not necessarily going to be pretty. I mean, you're making magic mundane. Mm-hmm. And that's, if you look at the Darkness series, again, Harry Turtledove, is that he's made magic pretty mundane. It's now something that you study and publish in journals, and everybody kind of has an idea of how it works because it's so common. Mm-hmm. But then you have mages doing pretty much regular jobs. Mm-hmm. Like you have people acting as essentially radar, mm-hmm. you know, surveillance.
Mm-hmm. No, that's actually kind of a cool idea.
Yeah, no, it's a great idea, and it's, but, you know, like we were saying, it's just basically taking technology and replace it with magic. Hmm. So it's no longer, it's not as special as it would be if you did have, you know, like a Gandalf equivalent.
Right.
Well, I think there's a difference between making magic mundane and making it average. Because a world that where magic is very common, it's wouldn't necessarily be the same as technology, but... I like the balance that D&D has where, you know, any kind of medium-sized civilization can expect to have a mage or two in it to do those kind of magical things that other people can't. But, you know, I'm sure they'd be very busy doing all their different kind of things. But I think right. The converse is also true, though. If you make magic very rare in order to balance it out, and you have a mage or two in your party, then that elevates them to being somebody very, very special. And you can look at all the different ways that might alter the route of the campaign. They might be worshipped as some kind of god or some kind of very special person. Or conversely, they might be considered dangerous, so they have to keep themselves secret wherever they go.
Right, yeah, I was thinking of, you know, keeping themselves secret. And, you know, Lyle brought up Harry Potter, you know, a while back. And the thing that kind of broke the realism there is, okay, you have all these really powerful wizards who, for some unexplained reason, are choosing to remain hidden. Mm-hmm. When if they really wanted to, they could control the world. And I'm not really believing that they don't want to do that, right?
There's well, some this, did.
well, exactly, some did. But the majority didn't, to where the point they still pretty much stayed hidden, you know. Mm. Where I think I've mentioned this before on the podcast, the Bartimaeus trilogy by Brian Stroud, I believe, is kind of like a Harry Potter-esque world, but exactly that happened. Magicians mm-hmm. are now, you know, top class. They're a higher class of people than people who cannot use magic, and they're basically in charge of everything. To where, yeah, people who can't use magic are relegated to menial jobs and second class citizens, and there's discrimination and prejudice. And I mean, I'm making this sound like a wonderful book, but it's actually I actually enjoyed it because, to me, it made a little bit more sense of how, yeah, these people can do anything. Mm-hmm. And well, so naturally they're going to put themselves in position of power.
Right. I think a lot of it depends on the actual abilities of magicians. Because if it is that catch-all, I can do anything, then, you know, why would you be happy going to a job and acting as some kind of radar device? You know, and why would you work alongside with regular people when you could easily make them work for you with your, you know, whatever kind of powers?
Right.
But I think a big part of it is the accessibility of magic, too. If it's not something where you're born special, if it's just a matter of studying and learning something, then that's a way that it would be integrated quite well into society versus the opposite of where, you know, they take over.
Yeah, or just thinking again like of Conan series where in that one it seems like anyone can learn magic mm-hmm. if you're willing to pay the price, and that price is to be a horrible person.
Yeah, there you go.
And a lot of people are not willing to pay that or... Yeah. A lot of people like magic is really dangerous, and a lot of people, I'm guessing, screw up to where they get, you know, taken by a demon before they are able to actually use any of their power mm-hmm. and whatnot. So,
what if you start as a horrible person?
Well, then nice. I imagine you advance pretty quickly. Yeah. You're like, good thing I already have these virgin bone brushes.
Well, I think I like how there's like colleges of magic. And I mean, you think back to like 100 years ago or 200 years ago where like a university degree was rare or even like 50 years ago. Mm. Now, like so many people are getting undergraduate degrees that it's kind of cheapened it, if you will.
Right.
But you could still do it. It's like anybody could be a mage if they get into these universities and are able to complete the studies. Mm. I mean, I know it's not magic, but within the Game of Thrones, you got the maesters.
Okay.
So right. A lot of people go in, but I mean, there's that one character who can't earn any links to the chain. Because he's terrible. He's rubbish.
Right.
So like having something like that, even though they end up just producing quasi-scientists, but one school of magic and everybody knows about it because everybody will want that mage to serve their different lords, you know.
I only went to community magic school. I'm not very good.
I was thinking a couple lower levels lower, like an online or a correspondence course. Yeah,
University of Phoenix.
The Rising Phoenix.
Right. Or the one in Arizona, either way. Yeah. I can't. That'd be funny. It's like you have somebody who's got like a fake degree of magic. I'm trying to fake that they keep do all these things.
Oh, that'd be pretty funny.
What does your scrying pool tell you? And he's like,
Yeah.
That would actually be really fun, a campaign where it's in a world where the mages have taken over, so you have people who are pretending to be magicians, but it's actually the mundane kind of stage tricks that people do now, tricks and things like that.
Yeah, what do you think? Go on.
Yeah. Again, thinking about, okay, what would happen and how would this affect the world? If magicians were in power, I bet that would happen. Mm-hmm. People would try and pass themselves off as magicians to get a leg up in society.
That'd be like Gattaca.
Hmm. Yes, it would be Gattaca with magic in place of technology. Yeah.
Or are you thinking about, what's his name, Saint-Germain? The guy who passed himself off as having all of these special powers. And they think it's probably just a lot of parlor tricks. Maybe the 18th century or the 19th century.
Well, you look on YouTube and you see all those fake Sufis in India go from town to town doing really bad magic tricks, but still getting lots of money from local populaces.
Mm-hmm.
Grr.
So we went through magic being so powerful that they control the world to charlatans.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I'm not really sure where to go from that one. Yeah. Yeah. I do like the College of Magic idea.
Well, I recently watched Noah, and it was mixed. I thought the potential was better than the outcome. But there was, you know, there was certain ideas of like to talk about angels and man versus angels and kind of a resentment there. And you could think that, you know, people would resent wizards.
Mm-hmm.
So perhaps they would even be ostracized in the world because people are worried about them being so powerful that people will unite to fight the wizards.
Right. That'd be pretty dangerous to ostracize wizards, though.
Yeah. I mean, certainly dangerous, but I mean, it's kind of like vampire, and that is like they have to stay hidden because they know if mankind were ever to, like, or humankind were ever to find out about them and rise up, they would actually be able to overwhelm them.
Right. No, as soon as I said that, or as soon as you mentioned vampires, I'm like, oh, yeah, good point, because it's kind of exactly the same thing where you get enough of these mundane people together, and yeah, there's not a lot magic can do against them.
Yeah. I love that line in the vampire book. They almost wiped us out once in the Middle Ages, and now they have jets and tanks.
Yeah.
The first incarnation of mage was interesting because they had the Tanocracy, who reduced the power of magic by promoting technology.
Right.
It's all about what people believe, and that has power. And you've seen that done in different things, you know, like gods having power. I mean, Clash of the Titans.
Right.
You know, if people believe in gods, then they have a lot of power. And if they don't believe in them so much or don't worship them, then they lose their power.
Mm-hmm.
So you have different things like that.
That'd be an interesting way to fuel magic for belief. And then, you know, the game becomes convincing people that you can actually do these things to get the energy to do them.
Mm-hmm.
After doing the last podcast, I started watching Legend of Korra, and in that series...
Because I told you about the two women kissing?
We were cheapen it. Why don't you? Thank you. Thank you very much for bringing it up. Anyway, haven't watched the Avatar: The Last Airbender series, but Legend of Korra supposedly takes place after the events in that, and in that one, it's very similar to what we discuss on the episode, where certain people are born with the ability to control a specific element, or more than one. And at least in the first season of Legend of Korra, there seems to be tension between like the benders, the people who can control elements, and non-benders. And one of the antagonists for that first season is kind of a resistance group who has developed a technique to take away a bender's abilities by, you know, hitting special pressure points and kind of draining their chi or whatever. And even though it's for kids, I tend to think that's something that would happen if you kind of looked at what a realistic, for lack of a better term, reaction to people having magic, essentially, would be, yes, the normal people are going to look for ways to protect themselves so that they don't get abused and end up downtrodden by these people who have abilities they do not.
Mm-hmm. I like that one episode in the Airbender series where they kept all of the Earthbenders on this island made of iron out in the middle of the ocean, so there weren't any rocks anywhere nearby, so they weren't actually able to use their powers and escape, kind of neutering their elemental power.
Right.
But yeah. On the other hand, they did have regular people without the airbending powers, but I don't think they treated them very fairly. They like the one guy who was fighter, quote unquote. He wasn't really skilled though. He was more comic relief than anything in the series.
Fair enough. I think things maybe get a little bit darker in Legend of Korra, where there's rebellions and bombings and, you know, kind of like this whole underground resistance thing about people who want to protect themselves. And
cool.
Then you kind of get into like martial law and, you know, had it not been a kid show, things could have gotten pretty dark. But, I mean, it is internally consistent where, you know, apart from airbenders who luck out because the stuff's all around them, generally you have to be near your element to bend it.
Right.
Except for fire, which for some reason they can just kind of manifest out of thin air.
Oh, yeah, I didn't even think about that.
Yeah, it doesn't really seem fair.
We always love that.
Oh, they don't have to, like, cause fire and then manipulate it?
No, it seems like waterbenders have to be near a source of water that they can kind of, you know, draw from and move. Earthbenders, as Chris said, you know, you have to be in contact with earth usually to do it. While firebenders just can kind of spontaneously make it, though it does at least seem to have to be within like a proximity of a body part, their body part. Like they're not pyrokinetics, they couldn't just make someone explode in a ball of fire.
Huh.
It kind of seems
like
to be...
I was thinking about that one X-Men character, Pyro, where
he wasn't able to create the same
fire.
Thing.
Yeah.
I really like that about him. Like he can't create fire, he can just control fire.
Mm-hmm.
So it always has to have something that can cause
that's
flame.
Kind of too bad. I think they missed something when they made them able to create fire.
Just a sec, get my sticks together.
Yeah.
Yep, like, sure. All right, now you're in trouble.
Wow, there wasn't the last firebender. Well, yeah, and he didn't even last long. Yeah. But you can also look at some of the, like, you know, storylines from like the X-Men where people are really afraid that there are going to be more people with magic, like more mutants, and they're eventually going to take over or replace. And that could be something that you could do in your fantasy setting, is not so much that they're worried that the magic users are evil, but they're worried that they'll actually take over.
Yeah.
And that people who aren't magic will become slaves and then, or just become nothing, just die out, be replaced entirely.
And don't forget, you know, there's also a good old-fashioned racism, too. Depending on what you want to get into in your campaign. Racism is obviously not the real word, right word for it, but magicism?
Prejudice?
Just say prejudice.
Prejudice, there you go. Hatred of difference, yeah.
I kind of wonder where you were going with that. When you're like, there's racism. I'm like, oh, we're going there, are we? All
Magophobia.
Right. yeah, it was kind of hard-pressed to think of an example where that... You know, what you just mentioned happens, Lyle, where people are worried that magicians will take over, you know, just by their sheer increase of numbers.
All right, well, that ends our episode on magic and realism. And as we said at the beginning, it's not necessarily about making it realistic, but making it make sense. So we looked at it internally, and some takeaways there are the source of the magic, the limits of the magic, the goals of the magic, or at least the goals of the setting, and looking at things like can you train in it? Is there stuff written down? And then we also looked at it externally and how it affects the impact of magic on the setting. And that can be manifest itself in a couple ways, and like how many wizards there are, how powerful the wizards are. And then, of course, how do people feel about that?
Well, also the extent of getting a bit minute, but also the extent of individual spells. Because, as Chris said, if you have a detect lies spell, well then everybody can use it and there's access to, you know, free access to all. Why do you have due process?
Or if you like D&D and just ignore that.
Yeah, I'm right, thinking, right. Due process? What's that? Yeah.
Well, okay, yeah.
All right, well, thank you for joining us again on Out of Red Hands. Check us out online at www.idlereredhands.com, outofredhands.com. You can listen to the episode right there on the website, or stream it through iTunes or Stitcher, or download it off of DriveThruRPG. You can plus one us on G+, you can like us on Facebook, you can follow us on Twitter, or you can join up and talk to us in our forums. Those are at idleredhands.com/forums, and are hosted by Happy Jacks. Thank you very much, guys. Or you can send us an email at info@idleredhands.com. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.
Bye.
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 Drive-through RPG. We average 9 new titles a day. That's over 60 a week. And we've got well over 15,000 RPG titles online right now. Drive-through RPG. The one true source for RPGs.
Idle Red Hands, recorded in Kobe, Japan. See us online at www.idleredhands.com. Music provided by Tripod Jimmy, and the song was Roadkill. Hope you enjoyed it. See you next time.